So we heard Jesus say, the measure you give will be the measure you get back. What you give is what you get? Sounds kind of like an eye for an eye. Sounds kind of like karma. What goes around comes around. Sounds like quid pro quo. I'll scratch your back and you scratch mine. Deal? It sounds so simple, but it's not. Love your enemy? Will they love you back? And who turns the other cheek, if anyone actually does turn the other cheek? Who does that expecting not to get slapped? Who goes the extra mile expecting to be thanked? You know that saying, no good deed goes unpunished? It sure seems like that sometimes. We live in an era of cancel culture, of intentional lucrative divisiveness, of virtual trolling and very real violence. And at first, Jesus' words sound so outlandish, so impossible that they are forever relegated to the land of sounds nice, but. In fact, not long ago, that great theologian, Donald Trump Jr., opined, we've turned the other cheek, and I won't comment on that. We've turned the other cheek, and I understand sort of the biblical reference. Do you though? Anyway, I understand the mentality, but it's gotten us nothing, okay? It's gotten us nothing while we've ceded ground in every major institution in our country. Again, no comment. But that follows a time-honored tradition of people, often very Christian people, ignoring those teachings of Jesus that are difficult, that ask us to do something hard. And the theological and political left has been no less guilty of that than the right, by the way. So maybe we need to revisit these difficult words, to examine why they're so hard to hear, much less to live by, and to ask, just because they're hard, does that mean we get to ignore them? Now, obviously, for most of us anyway, if someone smacks you on the cheek, our impulse is to smack them back. Or to run away. That would probably be me. In such stressful situations, our responses tend to be visceral, not thoughtful. As Peter Steinke, who wrote and worked extensively on helping churches become healthier, he explains, at the onset of threat, self-preservation has more relevance for survival than self-awareness. Long before we could ever talk or think, we called on automatic processes for survival. When we are anxious, we act before we think. The automatic pilot joins forces with the house of emotions and dominates. In a reptilian regression, our behavior is not mediated through the thinking part of our brains. Anxious, we are apt to lose objectivity and civility. We are in a position to be neither responsible nor loving. Reason and love, he says, are best served in time of calm. In periods of intense anxiety, what is most needed is what is most unavailable. The capacity to be imaginative. And it's not just our innate reptilian reflexes that make this text hard. It's so countercultural rather. It may even seem downright un-American. As another theologian, Alan Culpepper, has written, Jesus presents two principles that pose stumbling blocks for for most modern Christians. The repudiation of privilege based on wealth, and the repudiation of retaliation that spawns violence. These principles of Jesus are diametrically opposed to the assumptions of the marketplace and the media that shape American culture. The wealthy are privileged, and conflict requires that one show strength through retaliation. Our heroes, therefore, are usually neither poor nor nonviolent. I mean, let's face it, a lot of people think Jesus was a wimp. That's why they have to dress him up, picturing him toting an AK-47. But even in Jesus' time and place, violence was often glorified. And while today we tend to think poor people have brought their poverty on themselves, in Jesus' day, poverty was often thought to be perhaps God's will. But Jesus calls us to reject all those views. And he knew his teachings weren't easy. I think he was trying to offer an option to our fight or flight reactions, to show us a way to respond with imagination, with love. You know that concept of passive aggression? It's almost, not quite, but almost like Jesus teaches aggressive passivity, or to put it more nicely, positive passivity. He calls for a new attitude of de-emphasis on material things and re-emphasis on the people who lack them, and a new way to respond to hostility, to just say no to the invitation to escalate. Oh, he isn't asking people to be nice, but to be daring, to be creative, to imagine different ways of being that break cycles of violence and retribution and trauma. Now, of all the things Jesus talks about here, forgiveness may be the most difficult. I mean, I think it might be easier for me to give away most of my money or turn the other cheek than to forgive, for instance, members of a certain political party for the Pandora's box of ugliness they have unleashed upon the world. Though, can or should we forgive someone for doing harm when they're still doing harm? That's another topic, another sermon, but bears thinking about. Anyway, before he became one of our nation's greatest Supreme Court justices, Thurgood Marshall was an NAACP lawyer. He worked courageously for justice, traveled all over the country, and he was, by all accounts, a great storyteller. In his speeches, he often told a story about two sisters who were both single and lived together their entire lives. Now, at some point when they were both in their 50s, the sisters had a serious falling out and they stopped speaking to one another. Now, from what I've seen in life, in my work, enmities within families can be the worst. Maybe because you can walk away from a friend, but you stay connected to family even when you don't want to be. So it's not unbelievable that this feud between the sisters lasted for years, though they went so far as to divide their house into yours and mine. I mean, they even slept in the same room, but painted a dividing line down the center. Now, one night, Marshall says, getting up to go to the bathroom, one of the now elderly sisters fell and broke her hip. She cried out in pain, and immediately her sister was at her side, embracing her. As they waited for the ambulance, the sisters spoke to each other at long last, words like, "I'm sorry, and can you forgive me? And I love you. Who spoke first? No one knows. Thurgood Marshall always ended his speech by saying, the law can break down walls that divide people. It cannot build bridges that connect them. That is a matter of the spirit. You can legislate against hate crimes, and we should, but not against hate. People can be legally obligated to make reparations, and we should be. But you can't make people ask for or offer or accept forgiveness. You can't make people be generous. Even Jesus' greatest commandment, the love commandment, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and love your neighbor as yourself. You can't really love on command, can you? But you can act with love even if you don't feel it. And in time, that will change how you feel, as well as how you act in response to others. And let me just say here, echoing what Joel emphasized too, forgiveness of evil doesn't mean acceptance or approval of evil. It means rather letting go of the evil in our own hearts. And Jesus isn't demanding that we give or forgive, that we respond to violence with creative love, to aggression with compassion. I mean, that's up to us. I think he's showing us, though, what this new way of living can look like. And it's quite thrilling, really. For Jesus' call to positive passivity in this passage is not simply about walking away, though sometimes that's the best thing we can do, and it's not nothing. But Jesus is getting at something truly radical, calling us to work for the well-being, the shalom of the whole community. When we choose to respond with compassion, with generosity, with honesty, with mercy, we are participating in God's new creation. Because neither our Creator's restorative justice, nor Christ's unsurpassable peace, nor the Spirit's building of bridges will be brought to fruition by repaying evil with evil. Audre Lorde, self-described Black lesbian mother warrior poet, she wrote, "The master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. They may allow us temporarily to beat him at his own game, but they will never enable us to bring about genuine change." Yet the works of love, the works of forgiveness and generosity and peace must be understood as their own reward. Howard Thurman said, "Love has no awareness of merit or demerit. It has no scale. Love loves. This is its nature." So we must reject reactionary tools of vengeance and selfishness, because deep down we know they get us nowhere. We must reject vengeance and selfishness and take up the subversive tools of forgiveness and generosity, because when you love, when you give love, when you do love, when you share love, despite all odds, you become more loving. You see more love. You receive more love. You create more love. Look, Jesus said, when you give knowing you'll get in return, that's nice, but it's the easy way. Even Donald Trump Jr. does that. I want more for you, Jesus says. And I know it doesn't make sense. It's like gaining your life by losing it. Crazy. But when you do good, hard as it is, and expect nothing in return, that's when your cup overflows. The measure you give will be the measure you get back. It's not an eye for an eye. It's not karma. It's not quid pro quo. It'll get you nothing. Nothing but grace, pure and simple, abundant, unending, overflowing, ever-flowing grace. Thanks be to God. Amen.